Welcome back to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and at Health and Wellness Australia and New Zealand, we have a team of naturopaths who specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. And if you've struggled with allergies for a while or at some point in your life, you may have been told that you have a candida overgrowth, and maybe you tried one of those at-home spit tests and wondered what it all means. And candida is one of those topics that gets talked about a lot in the health space, but there's a lot of confusion and misinformation around it. So in today's episode, our Canberra naturopath and PAT practitioner, Fiona Joiner, is joining me to give us a breakdown of what it actually needs to happen for in the body for candida to become a problem and its connection to allergies and histamine intolerance as well. So hi, Fiona. Thanks for joining me on the podcast again.
Hi, Jess. It's nice to be here. Yeah, so we're going to talk about the role of your microbiome and how things like antibiotics, diet, hormones, and even stress can play a role in candida overgrowth in the body, and why it's often more about the environment rather than the candida itself. I'll also walk you through some signs to look out for, how to test for it properly, and most importantly, how you can support your body in a way that keeps everything in balance without going to extremes and making things worse. And I'll finish with some simple practical strategies that you can start using right away.
Sounds perfect. So let's get into it. Now, us ladies may be a bit more familiar with candida, especially if you've had a thrush infection before, which we all know is no fun. But there are which other areas of the body can candida actually impact?
Yeah, so thrush is definitely no fun at all. And it's kind of the right environment for candida to thrive if you think about it. So we find candida on the mucosal areas of the body, so vagina, the mouth, in the gut. It likes nooks and crannies with opposing skin surfaces. So if you think of sort of under your arms, if you have a baby with nappy rash in the little folds, those sorts of areas. It's nice and moist in there, and we also have skin that can be vulnerable to getting chafed and hurt, and that gives candida that permission to take hold, if you like, to overgrow in those areas.
And I really like the analogy that you gave in the blog where we talked about it's an opportunistic kind of thing. So it tends to jump in when there's a space for it. How does this happen in the gut, for example?
Yeah, so we have, if we've got a nice, robust, healthy microbiome, the candida doesn't get a chance to take hold. So our commensal or normal healthy bacteria that live in the gut, they've moved into the neighbourhood and they're renting out all the houses, if you like. And so candida's only got one or two options, a little flat here at the back alley, et cetera. So it can't really take hold at all. If we have something happen like a course of antibiotics, or we've had some hormonal changes, like we might see postmenopause in the vagina. So postmenopausally, we have a decline in estrogen, which changes the way the bacteria in the vagina can produce mucus. And so that's allowing that shift to happen, and candida can take hold there because the healthy bacteria can't survive like they could before menopause. So the same thing's happening in the gut. The candida, it finds these empty spaces on that mucosal lining in the gut, and it can move in. And because it is that opportunistic character, it can bring all of its extended family with it.
Yeah, so it's basically that's when it can become a candida overgrowth compared to just having like a couple of neighbours versus taking over the neighbourhood.
Exactly.
How can we know if candida is a problem for us? Like, what are some of the classic signs and symptoms that you see?
Yeah, so the symptoms will depend on where we're finding the candida, but we've got things like itching, burning, discharge, general soreness and irritation. If you've got candida in the mouth, for example, you can see white patches. They're quite visible if it's a bad overgrowth. People do also report lots of digestive symptoms like bloating, food sensitivities, if they have a candida overgrowth in the gut. And if an infection is left unchecked, this is placing quite a burden on the immune system. So people quite often report things like fatigue. And so previously we've talked about candida infections being systemic in the body, but really if this was happening, you would be so sick that you'd need hospitalization. And this would be more likely to occur in patients that are severely immunocompromised. They might be on medication that suppresses their immune system, and it would involve internal organs like the lungs. So when we're talking about candida infection these days, in general, normal of health people, it's not going to be that systemic presentation. It's going to be localized in mouth, gut, or vagina, or on the skin.
Yeah, makes sense. And I guess this is one of the misconceptions that we talked about, because candida has been talked about in the health space for a very long time. And one of the very old school things when it comes to candida is that at-home spit test. So I'm very keen to hear, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the old at-home candida spit test. Now, I've never used this test in clinic, and I actually don't know any naturopaths that do. I don't believe it's really an accurate way to test for candida at all. So for me, there's too many variables as to what that test could be showing and what could be influencing it for it to be accurate. So the test believes that if you have a glass of water on your bedside table and you spit into it first thing in the morning, and then you watch what happens to that saliva. If it grows tendrils and, grows legs basically and looks like that in the glass of water, that you have a candida infection. Now, the variables around that are that saliva is naturally thicker than water anyway, so I'm pretty sure it's going to look like that settling into the glass. And mucus can be, the thickness of mucus changes. So if you've been asleep all night and you wake up, you probably are a little dehydrated. So that's going to make your mucus thicker. And it's also depends on temperature. So depending on what time of the year you're doing the test, it might change the way your mucus looks in the water. So I think it's a no from me. I'm doing that test at home. Other ways that we can test for candida. So they're
more reliable ways that we can test.
Yeah, for. More reliable ways. You can do a swab and culture test. So that's where they'll take a little sample of the white patch in your mouth, for example, and then they'll have a look, see if they can grow any candida from that or what organism grows from that. But also the candida could be identified under a microscope, so they can look at it and tell that it is a candida organism. There are stool tests that you can do as well. So I use a stool testing clinic called Bimicroba, and the candida will show up on that if it's more than 0.01%.
Very sensitive.
And yeah, just as a little fun fact, in all the tests I have done, I have not seen any candida overgrown in the gut like that. So it's more of that opportunistic, very typical type of scenario where it occurs.
Yeah. That's so interesting, because part of the reason prompted me to want to do this episode as well is a lot of our client intake forms, which I handle on front desk, people do mention and tick the box that they have candida. So I have wondered, how is this testing happening? Is this something that's being self-diagnosed a little bit if it is sort of presenting with certain symptoms? So that's a very interesting little fun fact, I think, from you.
Yeah. I think there are some other stool tests out there, but I don't find them as reliable. And so they may be picking up, but to me that's not as accurate.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that there's some dietary factors like antibiotic use or too much processed food, which can cause candida to move on in. But what are some of the other factors that can lead to a candida overgrowth specifically?
Yeah, so it's really coming down to, humans have used yeast. So candida is a yeast. It's part of that fungi family. Mm. And we've used those foods in our diets for thousands of years. So we use yeast to bake our bread, to make alcohol. We love to eat mushrooms that are part of the same family. And we, who doesn't love blue cheese? Those sorts of foods, they're a natural part of our diet. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really those foods or the yeasts or the fungi that are the problem for us. It's what's happening with our bodies. Mm. And so like you've mentioned, after the antibiotics, all of those commensal bacteria, or a large portion of them, have been wiped out with the antibiotics, or their numbers have really reduced. And so now the candida doesn't have to compete as hard for that place on the mucosal lining of the gut. And yeah. So it's easier for it to take hold. I think the way I approach candida infections and things like that, it's not, okay, let's destroy that candida with everything we've got. It's what is happening in that environment, in that body, that the candida has been able to take hold. Mm-hmm. So is the person eating a really bad diet without any fiber, without any, polyphenols in their fruits and veggies? Is it all kind of processed food? And processed food, just as a little aside, is a double whammy. So it's missing your fiber and it's missing the polyphenols, so the antioxidants that the bacteria like to feed on. But it's also full of things like preservatives, emulsifiers, artificial colours and flavours. And we're now understanding that these have a negative impact on the microbiome as well. So they're, bad for our beneficial bacteria. So if your diet is looking like that, I'm not surprised we've got gut stuff going on. The good news is we can shift that, so it's not like, end of the world. So we might have that type of scenario. We might have someone who has issues with their immune system. So they might be on medication for rheumatoid arthritis or any other sort of autoimmune condition where they need to suppress their immune system for a while, and that's allowing the candida to take hold. Hormonal changes, like we mentioned before, postmenopause, if you're on the pill, even during pregnancy, just that slight shift in hormones is changing the environment in the vagina, steroids in the mouth for asthma, those sorts of things, and then the candida is just able to take hold.
Yeah, and candida has quite the sweet tooth as well, doesn't it?
Oh, it sure does. And so it can be a real problem for people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Mm. So it's been shown that people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, they have higher rates of candida colonization in the mouth compared to patients without diabetes. So we know that the glucose in the blood is a problem. And if we've got high glucose in the blood, our saliva is going to have a high level of glucose as well. Interestingly, we know that candida can multiply with these higher levels of glucose, so it uses it as a food. But further to this, high levels of glucose decrease the capacity of some of our immune cells, like neutrophils, to actually deal with the bacteria. Yeah. And sugars like glucose or sucrose in the diet, It's been found that they can allow candida to adhere at a better level to mucosal lining. So again, very complicated picture, but sugar can really influence that candida's ability to take hold.
Yeah. And that's something we talked about. We did a blog with Lila in Melbourne where we talked about sugar cravings and allergies and all of that connection. And candida was a big part of that as well. So I'll definitely link that in the show notes for anyone who does want to learn more about that sugar connection. But I think you've touched on a really important point when it comes to dietary factors. I feel like a lot of us, we're getting bombarded constantly with Instagram with the latest supplement and this and that. But it really comes down to, a lot of this work can be done through dietary changes. Would you agree?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. And if we're not onto the basics, then you can't out-supplement some things.
Oh, you cannot. You are speaking my love language, Jess. yeah, I get there's so many things on Instagram and online, and I love that people are doing their own research. Yes, 100% take your health into your hands and learn as much as you can about things. However, if someone is sort of saying, oh, their protocol is the right one, or yes, we need to eradicate candida from your body, what are they using to do that? So if we've talked about the neighborhood, the bacterial neighborhood in the body, and how we might give candida a chance to take over if the good bacteria move out. So if we're following these online protocols with, for example, high amounts of oregano oil, we're not just wiping out bad bacteria, we're wiping out that good bacteria as well. And then we're just making things worse because we've decimated everyone. And it's not the good bacteria that are going to come back quickly. It's the opportunistic bacteria like candida.
I feel like a good analogy is like a nice piece of lawn. And if you get rid of all the grass, and then, like you said, the weeds are going to be the ones that they're the hardy little things that are hard to get rid of. They're going to be the ones sprouting up next. So I think it's so important to get this diagnosed properly, go through the proper testing, not just do a little questionnaire or something we've seen online and go, okay, yep, we have candida. Firstly, you're saying it's actually quite rare, which is a good thing. So we don't want to be doing these harsh protocols on our gut, which are actually going to have longer term issues and could actually lead to candida in the long term. And one other little interesting one we talked about as well is there a candida version of SIBO?
Yeah, so SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, it's influenced by a lot of things. So again, we're looking at that bigger picture of what's going on with the health. It's driven by things like poor digestive function. It could be issues with motility. So if you have thyroid problems and food's not moving through the digestive tract like it should be, so it's slowing down, and all of these all of these complexities, for want of a better word, can just change the bacteria's ability to be in the small intestine. So normally the small intestine would move that bacteria through fairly quickly. But if that has changed, there might be an opportunity for it to overgrow a little bit more and be there. And candida can be one of those bacteria. And so it's known as SIFO, or small intestinal fungal overgrowth. And that could be causing real issues for people, you know, things like reflux, that terrible bloating after eating, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah. And we also did recently an episode on SIBO. So I will link that too for anyone who does want to learn more about the SIBO type of things. And it sounds like there's really so many contributing factors to candida. So it explains why we're seeing that listed on our intake forms with our clients. But is a candida overgrowth actually a contributing factor when it comes to allergies and histamine issues as well?
Yeah, definitely. So candida seems to have an impact on our ability to tolerate different foods. It can infiltrate and promote the degranulation of mast cells. So this means the body might be mounting an allergic response to something that should be normally considered harmless. Mast cells work for our immune system, and they normally help to keep our gut barrier nice and integral, so nice and strong. If the mast cells are activated, and candida seems to be able to do this, they release substances like histamine, which can weaken that tight cell junction in the gut that's maintaining that gut barrier integrity. So an overgrowth in the gastrointestinal tract could be increasing your reactivity to those different foods. And you may be experiencing some of those other types of symptoms attributed to mast cell activation and poor gut barrier integrity, like bloating, headaches, loose stools, and skin rashes.
Yeah. And I think it's really important. I think that's why we're seeing, like with those histamine issues, it creates that perfect storm for someone to develop food sensitivities. And so there's definitely that connection there when it comes to candida and histamine. So how do you use positive association technique or PAT for someone with candida as part of that holistic treatment plan to get them feeling better?
Yeah. And so, that's great for reducing food sensitivities. One of the things we find with candida is that increased sensitivity to other foods, but also the immune system, when it's dealing with the candida, it could be mistaking other foods with similar proteins, like in that fungi family, so your mushrooms and, you know, alcohol or other sorts of things like that, the proteins are similar to the candida. So the immune system's like, well, I actually better deal with that as well. Mm. So that's broadening that sensitivity. So where the positive association technique comes in, we can stop that immune system response to those different foods. So we can treat for that mushroom sensitivity if you really enjoy eating mushrooms and want to stop reacting to those. And we can do that while you're then working on why candida was able to move into the neighborhood in the first place. So that's the longer game, working on that fundamental stuff. And the positive association technique is just taking the sting out of it and letting you enjoy life a little bit more at the same time.
And getting those foods back into the diet, because that's something we talk about a lot, that we want to try and keep that good food variety to help boost that gut health overall. So for those of you who may be listening for the first time, I'll give you a quick run through of what a PAT session actually involves. So we have amazing naturopaths like Fiona here, located all over Australia and New Zealand, who perform PAT for a wide range of food, airborne and chemical reactions. And we use a form of muscle testing or kinesiology to assess these reactions to certain substance groups, and an acupressure-based treatment to help retrain the body to no longer have these big reactions to substances that are actually harmless. So you can learn more about PAT on our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au, to see if it is right for you. And I think it's fascinating how you said that the body can tag candida and basically make us react to things like yeasts and molds, which are very, very common treatments that we do. And it's very stubborn, because candida can actually create a biofilm, can't it?
It can, yes. It can be really tricky, and other bacteria can cause these biofilms as well. And once it's done that, so it's very clever, it wants to really settle into that neighbourhood, and then, you know, it doesn't want to leave anytime soon. So the biofilm can just make it difficult for treatment that we're using to break that biofilm down and get to the actual candida. But there are, especially herbally, some tricks that we can use to break that down.
Yeah. And we touched on this a bit earlier, but this isn't something you just want to treat with an over-the-counter antifungal, right?
No. We want to always work on that big picture, the whole microbiome. Now, you know, anyone with a thrush infection, you know, you might need that very localized antifungal treatment, because it can be really, you know, unpleasant and quite
painful.
Yeah, it's not something you want to put up with for long, but you would, so if you need that acute treatment, but then have a think about, okay, so what's caused that ability for my body to get the candida overgrowth, and how can I change that?
Yeah. And I think working with a naturopath like yourself is key if this is a recurring issue for someone listening. But do you have any naturopath approved at home tips for our listeners today?
Yeah. So if you were, say you had that local thrush infection, so the good old fashioned tampon with yogurt, because you're treating that right there. That's a very local type protocol that you could use while you're working. And everything else, things like the pomegranate juice can work to break that biofilm down. And it also, we want to include lots of foods that your commensal bacteria want to eat. And so it's coming back to that really good diet, managing stress, all the boring stuff, you know, even exercising and sweating, because sweating is a great way to get rid of toxins and things like that. But in terms of diet, so minimize sugar and processed foods as much as you can. Lots of veggies, so eat the rainbow. I think if I had a dollar for every time I said eat the rainbow, I could retire. It's just providing all of those different types of fibers and polyphenols for the microbiome.
Yeah. I heard recently that we should be eating around 30 different plant types per week. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic mantra to take on board. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not as hard as it sounds. If you think about, you know, if you like to eat nuts every day, you might have a handful of, I don't know, almonds every day, but you could just make yourself up a nut mix that's got six different nuts in it, and then you changing your fruit and veg up, you'll get there.
Yeah. I think that's a great tip because I'm a meal prepper myself. Yes. So I'll typically prep like four serves of a meal to get me through the week. But I think that's a really good tip just to get some variety, try and mix up the veggies. And have you seen that trend where they freeze different prepped sort of, you have your protein and then your veggie and your carb, and you can mix and match it throughout the week to try and do. So I think that's a great way to do it as well. Yeah. And you also gave us one of your favorite recipes. So that's included on the blog. So that'll be linked in the show notes, of course, if anyone wants to check that out. And as we start to wrap up today's episodes, to any of our listeners who suspect they may be dealing with candida and having these ongoing or flare-up of symptoms, what would be your key message to leave us with?
So there are some natural antifungal foods that you can include. So garlic is a beautiful one. Mm-hmm. If you love your garlic, get stuck right into it. And also there's a tea that you can buy at your local health food store called Poor Darko Tea. Nobody knows how to pronounce it.
I thought it was Pau de Cow personally. But
that's my best attempt. But it's a lovely antifungal tea and supports the immune system generally. So, again, I would just do that, a short and sharp type thing until symptoms subside. But, yeah, just looking after yourself, so managing stress, all of those sorts of things. And you might even want to take some fermented foods and your live yogurts, those sorts of things.
Yeah. So to kind of wrap things up, basically candida isn't the enemy. It's more like an opportunist. So when our microbiome is supported in balance, it behaves itself. But when things are off, that's when it can start to get a little bit too comfortable and causes some issues. So if you've been listening along and thinking this sounds like me, skip the guesswork and maybe that dodgy spit test and get the right support from a naturopath like Fiona. So you can visit Fiona's website on the wodenwellness.com website, where she practices in her clinic in Canberra or also provides online consultations. And Fiona, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your knowledge on candida. It's been a really interesting and fun chat. So for those listening along, if you enjoyed this episode, you can follow our channel, the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast, for past and future episodes. And I look forward to next time, Fiona.
Thanks, Jess. Me too.